is up front on The Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. Thank you for joining us today. For many African migrants, home is both the place they left behind and the new environment they must adapt to. This duality creates a sense of longing and belonging that is often in tension. Ethiopian-American filmmaker Saret Yosef's new film titled Journeys explores the meaning of home, identity, and memory through a blend of documentary interviews and original poetry, focusing on the experiences of Ethiopian women like her mother, who migrated from Addis Ababa to Washington, D.C. in the 1980s. She joins me in studio to talk about her project. Saret, thank you so much for joining us today to talk about your innovative visual project. I really enjoyed watching it. So what inspired you to take this experimental approach to storytelling, and how personal is this project to you?
It's extremely personal. I identify as a storyteller broadly, as a multidisciplinary storyteller, and writing is generally kind of my entry point into storytelling, but I very much rely on experimentation to kind of guide me through the process and kind of allow the form and structure to kind of take shape as I'm going along. So I always knew I wanted to kind of capture my mother's story, those of her peers. I think generally, like, as a storyteller, as a Black woman, I am very much someone who gravitates towards those kinds of nuanced narratives, and amplifying the narratives of women who are like me and of the diaspora, right? Mm-hmm. So I always knew that this was going to be a story that I was going to capture in some form. Thankfully, I was able to get a grant from Humanities DC to capture oral histories. So I used that funding to split production from here and also in Addis Ababa, where I recorded the stories of these six women. And from there, it kind of, I would say, evolved through the process of, again, just like discovery, self-discovery, and then also creative discovery. I had all the while been kind of, in previous trips to Ethiopia, been going to Addis Ababa University. They have the Institute of Ethiopian Studies there, in what was formerly Haile Selassie's, one of his palaces. And I had been kind of collecting archival imagery from not only in the 1980s, but prior to the 1970s, 1960s as well, with this kind of first wave of, like,
immigrants.
Yeah, this, like, this kind of first wave that happened, or major wave, I should say. And then obviously later on in the 1980s, there was an even larger wave. But how did D.C. become this, you know, little Ethiopia?
Little Ethiopia, yeah. Yes. Let's go back a little bit to, when did you know that you wanted to tell this story? Was it when you were still young, when your mother told you? What piqued your curiosity to the story?
I think I'm always telling this story in some way, shape, or form, right? And it's just been the genre and the kind of process that has been changing, but I see so much of my work as like a constellation, and there's so many connections between them, right? So at the same time that I'm doing this documentary project, I've also been working on a narrative project that very much kind of parallels the story as well, about kind of experiences of first generation Ethiopian women in both sides of the ocean, on both sides of the ocean, but also I'm working on poetry constantly as, again, just as a writer who dabbles in a lot of different kind of
mediums.
So I feel like I've kind of always been using kind of questioning and exploration to kind of guide me through the process of like adding more questions to the conversation,
right,
and connecting my personal story to other people's.
Did this project answer any questions for you?
No, it never does. It only brings more questions.
And we have to mention that your project draws inspiration from Tozake Shange's For Colored Girls. Shout out to our own Tozake from Bowie, Maryland. I don't know if you know that. She's our legendary. She passed away like 2020. So when I looked at it, I was like, wow, I've seen this somewhere.
Yeah.
I like the storytelling. I like the... I love to see stories that are non-linear in that way, and and this was, honestly, it blew my mind when I watched it.
You.
So what parallels do you see between your work and Tozake's work? Is that something that you consciously did?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, her work was absolutely an inspiration. Her concept of the choreo poem was very much her own, and combining choreography and, you know, dance movement with poetics was innovative in and of itself, you know? So she did that in the 1970s, in the same decade that my mother came to the States. So as a fan of Entozake's work, and just being in admiration of her tribute, this tribute that she created to Black women through these stories, and through this poetry, I kind of wanted to find my own way to experiment and craft and also create bridges, right? So the form that I was familiar with was documentary. I had previously done a documentary about the Red Line Metro here in D.C. and its relationship
graffiti.
to metro graffiti.
I remember that many years ago.
So that was my first.
I think that was the first time I actually saw your name.
Yes. Okay.
That, yeah.
But I'm sure we've crossed paths plenty of times since then. But so that was kind of, I was familiar with documentary form, but she kind of, Entozake Shange, gave kind of me the, I would say, almost like the courage to just branch out and create a new form for myself. So that's where the docu-poem came about.
All right. So how do you define home in the context of this project, Journeys? I like the way you wrote it. Journey-esque.
Yeah.
And how do you define, how do the themes of migration and identity play into the idea of quote-unquote home across the two cities of Addis Ababa and Washington, D.C.?
Yeah, you're absolutely right that it's a very conscious journeys, plural. Mm. So it's journey and then the in parentheses, the S. And this, I kind of go on to add like the colon of Addis, D.C. because I really see this as kind of, again, just like a constellation, a continuum. And there's so many intersections. Like, yes, this is very much about the stories of Ethiopian women who have traveled from Addis to DC, but I, in also launching the tour and taking this project to different cities, want to it to be very much a call-in for other Black women, for other women of color to speak about their experiences. And I also kind of treat migration and movement in a very broad sense, in the same way, again, inspired by Entozake Shange, of thinking of what are the, like, the transnational, when we say migration, this could be from the south of the U.S. to the north,
the
Great Migration, you know. I remember I always kind of call, shout out this activist, Mika Gadsden in South Carolina, who I interviewed, I feel like, during the pandemic. And when I asked her, you know, her origin story, she said, I'm a child of refugees from the Great Migration. So even that kind of was like a, you know, like a mind-blown emoji where I'm like, you're absolutely part of this conversation too.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
Just creating as many connections as possible.
Right. So as someone navigating these multiple identities, how do you hope that this project, Journeys, will resonate with others who may also be grappling with the questions of belonging and cultural memory?
I, again, just really hope it's a call-in where people can see themselves asking these questions of their parents, asking these questions of themselves. You know, the first question that I start off with all my interview ease and my narrators was, you know, if you were to tell the story of your life, where would it begin, right? And that can be very literal of a location, or that it could be very abstract and figurative. So I feel like we all have origin stories, and especially the stories of women, Black women, are often unsung. And this is, like, I feel, an opportunity for us to speak for ourselves.
Absolutely. What do you say is your origin story?
I was born in D.C. and have always had a tie and a pull to Ethiopia, in Addis Ababa specifically. My sister lives there now, and it's kind of just always been, I would say, I feel like a home that I inherited.
You mean D.C. or Addis Ababa?
Addis Ababa.
Right.
It's always kind of, in having these conversations, really recognizing and admitting that you don't really feel at home in any place.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Each episode of Journeys is paired with a video portrait that is dedicated to Black feminine gaze. How do you ensure that the visual elements align, or how did you ensure that the visual elements aligned with the poetry and the oral histories?
So it's very...
Talking about a little bit about the process itself.
I was very much... I mean, with Redline DC, it was very much a one-woman band, but I was able to bring in other people as the project progressed to, you know, do cinematography and things like that. With Journeys, again, it started very much just as a siloed experience of me taking my poetry, doing these, recording these oral histories myself, and then editing the audio as well, using this archival imagery that I had amassed. But the kind of point where the story opened up, I would say, is where I got a chance to invite other animators when I was in Addis Ababa to reaching out to, it was ideally supposed to be all femme crew, but we had to tap in some men. But it was essentially an idea through my creative direction and the cues that I gave them. They were able to take my imagery and really create the stories, create the visuals around the audio that I had created. Mm. So I would say it was an extremely like collaborative process, but I was very much, you know, taking the reins.
What was the most surprising or most powerful story that you encountered while interviewing Ethiopian women for this project?
Surprising.
Or maybe your mother. Start from your
mother.
Yeah,
I honestly was going to say that. I think it's not so much a surprise, I would say, but I think the stories that are the closest to us are almost the ones that are hardest to approach. So starting with her story really helped me kind of feel comfortable having those same conversations with her peers, with women who, you know, I consider part of my extended village, and allowing them to hopefully feel comfortable enough to like reflect on a past that is complicated.
Mm. How does your mother talk to you about Washington, D.C. in the 80s as the, you know, fast wave of Ethiopian migrants coming in? Say, a young woman moving from Ethiopia right now in 2024 have in common with the woman moving from Ethiopia in 1979 or 1980 when they first traveled here?
That's such a good question. I truly wonder what they would have in common, because I see so many distinctions, right? My mom actually came in the 70s, so she came in 71, and it was absolutely a completely different district. She was also a proprietor. She had a business in what's now considered, you know, the Little Ethiopia or 9th and U area.
Yeah.
Or I should say more popular on T Street. But yeah, she had a business, and would also talk about how difficult it was to kind of not only establish the business but keep it running when there's so much neglect happening in terms of like the city's support of these entrepreneurs, of immigrant communities. There was a lot of pressure from like immigration trying to like send people back who were here for student visas and tried to extend for longer and things like that. She would talk about how having to kind of like they would have to do potlucks to kind of gather money to get people out of jail and things like that. And then also just the lack of information. She like repeatedly would tell me like, we can't Google things to find out what to do. You know, we had to go to the library, and word of mouth was very much what we relied on to survive.
Now, do you see Journeys as a part of a large body of work? When you started out, did you see it becoming this big thing that it has become, really?
You know, I don't think you can always see the whole picture. I mean, I think it's still kind of coming, you know, into light for me. I really do want the project to grow, especially with the tour. I've gone to Chicago so far. I've gone to Memphis. And I want it to be something that can be, as I said, a call-in and kind of a collaborative effort for other people to take questions like this and hopefully take them into their communities as well.
And how do you want this this project to contribute to conversation about migration, diaspora, identity within the larger context of African and African-American experiences?
Just to show the nuances, I think, are really important. I think oftentimes when we think of migration in the context of the continent, it's very much a refugee experience. It's very much one that's like fraught. And I'm not trying to undermine that experience exists, you know. But I think it's about showing diversity. It's about allowing a plurality of voices and experiences to show through.
I'm curious to know your mother's reaction to this project.
Oh, she was, I think she's happy with it. I hoped, I would venture to say. She was actually at the event, yes, at Eton. Yeah. That was in March of this year. And so she's been, we also had an event last year in March as well through Humanities DC, where she was a panelist, you know. And I, again, have been wanting to use the events around the project to create like larger conversations with the collaborators and with other people who hopefully feel connected to the stories that they hear.
Mm. So you're screening around the country. You've done a couple of cities. Are you planning to take this on the road to Addis at some point? So
we actually have screened a working cut in Addis. That was one of the first places that I got to screen. And as I said, we've been going to some domestic cities, but I would like to take it as far and wide as possible. So anybody listening, feel free to come and or ask me to come and to host the project. I would love to not only screen it, but also to collaborate with other artists of different disciplines to kind of really engage the themes around the project.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for taking time to, you know, talk to us. I really enjoyed watching this and in many ways spoke to my experiences and people like myself as, you know, immigrants here in the Washington, D.C. area. What are you currently working on?
As I said, there's a narrative script that parallels this documentary story. I'm also working on a collection of poetry, again, very much kind of geared towards like the Black woman. And I use that in a very kind of expansive term. And yeah, I feel like I'm always kind of looking for opportunities to collaborate with other artists as well.
That was Saret Yosef, an Ethiopian-American filmmaker and writer. She was talking to us about her new documentary titled Journeys. You're listening to Upfront on The Voice of America. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Feast with your ears on Music Time in Africa, your connection to the best pan-African music. Hello, this is Heather Maxwell inviting you to join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
This one, this one,
every show brings you the best music from across the continent, old songs you know and love, and new songs to discover. You'll meet artists too. Listen to Africa's superstars and rising stars in exclusive, unplugged interviews on the radio or on my YouTube channel. Search for Heather Maxwell, Music Time in Africa. We play only the best right here on VOA Africa.
And we are back. This is Upfront on the Voice of America. Now, research shows that storytelling plays an important role in conservation efforts, especially for children, as it brings environmental issues to life by simplifying complex environmental concepts while instilling a sense of responsibility and empathy for nature from a young age. Tanzanian filmmaker Aika Kirei is the creator of the animated series Chiku and Katope. She tells me that by using relatable characters and engaging narratives, the award-winning series has been able to reach thousands of primary school kids in Tanzania, educating them on conservation issues in an entertaining and impactful way.
First of all, congratulations on the success of your animated series, Chiku and Katope.
Yes.
And of course, your documentary, Fahari Yetu, Zanzibar Saves Its Seas. Talk to us about what inspired you to create these projects and what message were you hoping to convey to your audience?
Yeah, so I was a producer for Fahari Yetu, Zanzibar Saves Its Seas, and I wrote, created, and directed the animation Chiku and Katope. And for Chiku and Katope, what I really wanted was to talk about conservation, but to children, and to start that at an early age, because, you know, when you cultivate that interest and that care for the environment at early age, children then grow up to be the adults who make the decisions about the environment, who live with the environment, who can actually help to kind of create policies that can create a better, like, a conservation culture in the country. So that was really my target. And I made it in Kiswahili because we really don't have that content in Kiswahili.
Okay. How has it impacted children?
It's been amazing. We've taken it to many schools, screened it to thousands of children, and their feedback has always been like, you know, we've learned a lot. We usually have like Q&As before and after, and just the responses. We've had like drawing sessions with the children, and just the learning and the knowledge, and like you see the inspiration. Like, you know, we want to be like chief, we want to be like the top, we want to protect our environment. So the response has been really amazing.
Mm. And how do you approach storytelling when tackling these complex environmental issues? What do you think makes a compelling environmental narrative?
That's a good question. I think what makes a compelling environmental narrative is something that is relatable to the context where the story is being told. And it really needs to take into it has to be localized, and it has to really figure out what is the purpose, who are you talking to, and what story are you trying to tell. So once you've answered all those the questions, and also to figure out what is the issue at hand, I think you can really structure a story that is engaging and that can really be reach a large number of people, if depending on who you're trying to reach.
Yeah. Mm. Now, of course, Tanzania, like many of these East African countries or African countries, is known for its rich biodiversity and environmental challenges, of course. How do you see the role of storytelling and media in addressing these challenges and promoting conservation efforts in the country?
Storytelling is key because there's a lot of research that has been done at university level with scientists. But how do you communicate that to the larger population? How do you share those findings and that research in a way that is actionable and that can reach the people who actually are engaging with that environment and those resources that have been talked about? So storytelling is really key in making that data meaningful and actually creating impact on the ground.
Mm. Now, beyond filmmaking, you are a National Geographic explorer. Can you tell us more about your exploration work and how it intersects with your passion for storytelling and environmental advocacy?
Yes, as a National Geographic explorer, I'm telling about freshwater conservation stories, which is under the World Freshwater Initiative, which at this stage, this phase, it's telling stories about the freshwater challenges in different areas around the world. So my focus was in Tanzania, Dar es Salaam, looking at the lakes that used to be there and how they've changed over time. And it's been something that required a lot of research because we really don't have that documentation at the moment in our country. So the biodiversity is something that through this World Freshwater Initiative and through this documentary, it kind of looks at how the biodiversity has changed through human activity and the development of cities.
With the rise of digital media and streaming platforms like YouTube, Netflix, TikTok and others, or Instagram, we know that consumer habits are changing rapidly. How do you see the future of environmental filmmaking evolving, and what opportunities and challenges do you anticipate?
The future of environmental filmmaking is broad. I think depending on the target audience that you want to reach, you can use all of these platforms that are available today, and that's a great thing. And I think that would actually invite more filmmakers and more storytellers into the space, so that's really wonderful. Yes.
What advice would you give to aspiring filmmakers and writers who are passionate about using their craft to raise awareness about environmental issues and inspire positive change? How do you start? And yeah, go ahead.
I say if you have a phone, if you have a group of people, or even if yourself, go out there. Find out what story means a lot to you in your community. There's stories everywhere. I think once you've noticed that, and if you see a topic that you're really curious about, learning more about, or that impacts you in your daily life, go out there, tell that story, talk to a community, and share that story with others. I mean, mm-hmm. That's in whatever level, from, again, as you said, social media, Instagram, TikTok, 1-minute videos, it's all impactful.
You could have told, or you could be telling different stories. There's a myriad of stories around the continent, whether from politics or entertainment. Why did you choose this subject matter, environment?
Environment, as does the politics, but environment affects us all. And it's something that not a lot of effort or not, but in compared to other kinds of topics, subjects that are they receive a lot of attention, it's something that we engage with daily, but we don't really put a focus on in terms of like what are we doing to the environment. And when you tell stories about the environment, and it kind of helps people to be more inspired in changing their behavior, changing their attitudes, and helping maybe to conserve it.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was Tanzanian filmmaker and conservationist Aika Kirei. She is the creator of the animated series Chiku and Katope. You're listening to Upfront on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. Shadell Moore's album, titled Inward Awakening, is a multi-genre poetic collection that explores self-knowledge and empowerment. She says that she quit her job as a successful television host to embark on a journey of self-discovery through the arts, hoping to pass on the lessons for personal development and consciousness to others. We sat down for a conversation about her journey as a motivational speaker, her music, plus her connection to Africa.
One of your tracks on this album is titled Africa Inside of Us.
Yes.
Let's talk to us about your own background and the identity and that connection to Africa that this album has revealed to you.
Yes. When you go within yourself, there's no way a human being, in my opinion, can go within themselves and not recognize and not honor Africa, even if you're white, because our identity is shifted to this place, right? Mm. So I've always had that type of belief, but Africa inside of us, it's so crazy, King, but a lot of times in my life, when I don't want to get emotional, but when I am scared to do something, when I face self-doubt, when I face negative thoughts, because this is all part of the human experience, I tap into that inner African power. I'm like, oh, no. My ancestors, we are beasts,
yes,
okay?
Yes.
Our ancestors are beasts. Shar, you can do the thing. And it's like something just goes within me, and I'm like, whoo! And it's like, oh, my gosh, I've been able to tap into this thing. And it's like this divine power and this divine protection because you honor who you are.
Absolutely.
You know? And it's amazing. And I try to tell people this stuff, and I tell people, once you get connected with your African identity, and however that looks like to you, because I'm a believer, not trying to force anybody to be anybody but themselves. Mm-hmm. But once you get connected to these roots, you start to grow because it's part of your foundation.
Yeah. So you find your, I guess, your inner gangster.
Yes,
that's
inner
one of the
gangster.
One of the other
Everybody
tracks.
Everybody got inner gangster.
So what is your inner gangster?
Yeah. Inner gangster is all about courage in this journey of life. Every one of us will be tested in some way.
Everybody got an inner gangster, puffin' booted like a soldier.
So inner gangster is to remind us about that courage that's in all of us. Because sometimes in life, it's going to hit you. And you have to decide, am I going to allow these things to take a hold of me? Or I'm going to walk in that God power and get up. So inner gangster is all about being a fighter. And
yeah.
I've been a fighter since day one.
Fighting.
Oh, yeah.
Non-stop.
Absolutely. We never stop fighting.
Obviously, there's this negative connotation to gangster.
That's
you
what
were trying
think.
To,
I was
know,
trying to do the positive
yeah,
thing about it. Because
yeah.
it's like that resilience to keep going and saying, you know what, I got this.
You got this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you ever have moments of doubt or self-doubt where you think maybe I'm not doing the right thing, I've not done it the right way? Mm-hmm. How do you examine yourself and be honest with yourself when you're not sure of which path you're taking your own?
That's a deep question. I believe nobody's exempt from the human experience. We're all going to go through things. So anybody who says they don't have self-doubt or insecurities, they're lying. But I have to also realize that when I'm facing this negative energy, then I'm not allowing this thought to define me.
Mm-hmm.
Because once we start entertaining self-doubt, we go into a dark hole. And what happens is negative energy is so beyond powerful that it attracts other things. It's like once you start a dark thought, you're going to think about this. You're going to think about this. And living in lack is terrible for you. So when I face these negative thoughts, I allow myself to process it and realize like, okay, I am not my thoughts, and try to switch to something positive.
Mm.
It's a process, but it does work because the thoughts are always going to come, but you have to realize I am not my thoughts.
With that, we come to the end of our show today. Many thanks to my guests and to you for tuning in, whether you tune in via our FM stations or on streaming platforms. We thank you. Remember to connect with us on our social media platforms. We are at VOA Upfront or VOA Africa. Check out our website at www.voaafrica.com to listen to our other programs. Until next time, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington. Have a great week ahead, Africa.
Music time in Africa. Savor the flavor of African music. Hi, I'm Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Tune in, feast your ears, and dig in to an hour of amazing Pan-African music, featured interviews, and music news. Music Time in Africa, Friday at 0900 and Saturday and Sunday at 0900, 15, 20, and 22.